gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Did GoToMeeting pick a show to sponsor? I mean, the most exciting man in show business coming up in just a minute. GoToMeeting, that's right, brought to you by GoToMeeting. It's the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, type in the promo code Stephanie. Be sure to use the promo code Stephanie. We've retooled the Violent Torpedo of the Truth show today.
Oh, we have?
Yes, yeah, so it's going to be more of a Q&A thing today.
Yeah, I've found that Q&A always works best.
More of a mediocre tornado of truth or
whatever.
Okay, StephanieMiller.com, the website.
And how much are people paying to go to a Q&A?
It's been retooled.
Oh, my God.
All right. Hey, let's have a Q&A with the most exciting man in show business. David Schuster joins us now, journalist extraordinaire.
Stephanie, so great to be with you. How are you guys doing today?
Good, honey. You too. So, lots of big doings today. There's a budget meeting right at the White House to see if we can avert a shutdown. Yeah. What are you hearing? How's the...
Well, I'm hearing that I'd say a shutdown is pretty likely, in part just because the numbers that... it's hard to negotiate with people whose numbers don't make any sense.
You're talking about the number of teabaggers outside at the rallies?
Representative Jason Chaffetz, who got on L4 yesterday and said, we have to remember in February we added over $220 billion to our debt in just 29 days. Well, no, that wasn't what... The people that the White House are trying to negotiate with don't seem to understand the numbers. I mean,
right.
And when most of the Republican caucus doesn't understand the numbers either, it then becomes extraordinarily difficult for the Republican leadership to be able to strike a deal with the White House and be able to sell it to their own members.
Well, how do you negotiate with people that don't seem to understand the basic rules of American democracy, like Eric Cantor? How do you go on television and go, if you, the Senate, doesn't pass something, then the House law becomes law or something?
Yeah, I mean, they don't understand basic rules. And I think the other thing is, I mean, to my chagrin, I feel like the Democrats have already given in way too much.
Yep.
I mean, the Democrats are lucky in a sense that they are negotiating with idiots. Because if the Republicans, in a sense, had their act together, the Republicans would be getting a lot of what they want, and the Democrats would be giving away the store. But the Democrats seem to be saved by the fact that the Republican side of this negotiation is incompetent. And as a result, there may not be a deal anyway, despite the Democrats' malfeasance and how they've handled this.
Yeah, the only math that John Boehner seems to have right is that they only control... one half of one third of the government. And I agree with you about the negotiation. David, I had hoped we could revisit, the tax breaks for the top 1%. I'm like, how can we have a serious conversation about the deficit when that's like the holy grail? Like, oh, no, we couldn't possibly ask, the top 1% to pay their fair share.
Right. I mean, if the issue is the deficit, and I'm not sure it really is, I mean, I think Republicans don't care so much about the deficit as they do care about just sort of strangling the federal government in programs that they don't like. But if the issue really were the deficit, then what on earth are we doing in Afghanistan where we're spending, a couple $1 billion a month? What on earth were we doing when we extended the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, as you pointed out? I mean, there are all sorts of key ways you could make a huge impact on the deficit rather than, say, taking away programs that help the poor or the disadvantaged or people who are hungry. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, as someone said, is there a better use of our money than helping educate the poorest in our community? I mean, in terms of, the future of this country, we're going to talk to Reverend Jim Wallace later, is fasting along with a lot of other people. But exactly what you just said about the budget being a moral document, among other things, but go ahead.
And the other part about it is, everyone likes to talk about 10-year plans. What will our deficit look like in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years if we continue spending the way we're spending? Well, imagine how money gets added to the deficit if you don't take care of the neediest in our society, you don't give them basic needs, basic food or education, they essentially, without some help, become an even greater drag on society when they end up on the streets or they end up in the hospital rooms or they end up essentially needing government assistance that's even greater than what they need just to feed themselves right now. And so it's just such a short-sighted policy to sort of end these programs and to, punish the poor and the people who don't have great educations. And I get back to the whole idea. It's sort of like I think with healthcare. I mean, there was the idea of, we should just, we should not do anything to fix healthcare, when studies prove that if you give infants particular immunizations, you spend, to say, you know, for every dollar that you spend on a kid who's, you know, 1 to 2 years old, you save $5 by the time the kid is 5 years old,
right,
because of diseases that you're able to prevent. It's the same concept with a lot of these social programs, and yet everyone is focused.
I love that you feel like you have to, for our Republican friends, you have to put it in terms they understand. Don't think of it as helping babies. Don't think of it as helping poor children, because I know you won't like it then. Think of it as a way to save money.
Right.
So, you know, but the thing we're seeing, obviously, you know, is this overreach. I mean, look at the approval ratings. A lot of these Republican governors that, I mean, we've got polls showing the American people support, you know, collective bargaining rights 2-1. We've got a big election today in Wisconsin, of course, for the Supreme Court. We had Joanne Kloppenburg on last week. And, you know, that's kind of attention to money you don't normally see on that kind of race, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right about the overreach. I mean, the Republicans and so what they're doing with their union busting have energized unions and even centrists in America far more than I think anybody had really sort of anticipated. And again, I mean, as we all know, elections are sort of one in the center. It's not, they're not one on either sort of extreme. And when either extreme sort of energizes the center the opposite way, that is a political problem for the group that was taking the initial steps. And so here you have, you know, the Republican right wing thinking, okay, we're just going to bust the unions. And all of a sudden, centrists in America are like, wait a second, what on earth is going on in these states? Why on earth are we trying to balance the budget on the backs of teachers who educate our kids and are responsible for trying to make sure that our school system doesn't completely disintegrate? It doesn't make any sense, even to Americans who aren't paying close attention to politics. And I think that's where, I mean, I'm sort of the view that if you have the election today, I disagree with Republicans who think, oh, you know, Republicans would continue to roll. I think Democrats would be in great shape if an election were held today, just because people are so infuriated.
Yeah, wow. I mean, even the judges on their side, this David Prosser apparently called the state's chief justice a bitch at one point, and he also said that his decisions will complement Governor Walker. That's the kind of fair, independent judicial mind they have on their side.
You know, it's just so stupid. I mean, but again, I don't know what it is with sort of the right wing that's going on these days. I just feel like the discourse has gotten so sort of immature and juvenile. And there, I feel like there once was a time in this country where even if you had a policy disagreement, you could at least have a civil debate. All right, maybe not such a civil debate, but at least argue based on the facts. And, you know, one side would have, you use logic. It's like logic has been thrown out the window, and it all resorts now to sort of denigrating the other side or calling people names, or once you're sort of pinned down in an argument, then you make it personal. And it's really disgusting.
No, trust me, I've experienced this personally and professionally. Well, you know, I was reading an article which actually strikes close to home, but talking about, you know, how extreme the Tea Party really is and how they're pushing the entire party, and they're basically saying it could be another Goldwater election. I mean, who do they have? I mean, you're looking at these, like, oh, you know, Michelle Bachmann forming, Donald Trump says we should, you know, we should go in and take Iraq's oil. I mean, it's just, they're trying to out-crazy each other, aren't they?
Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, Michelle Bachmann is getting the largest crowds in Iowa right now of all the Republican field. And it's, I mean, she's insane. I mean, the stuff that she doesn't know what she's talking about, even though people say, oh, compared to Sarah Palin, she's, you know, pretty smart. Well, that doesn't seem
well, in fairness, David, she wanted to start her campaign where Plymouth Rock is there in Iowa.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, with Sarah Palin and Donald Trump, you know, it's a really big problem for folks like Mitt Romney, who may be, you know, tempted to try and have some logical arguments, or even, you know, Republicans who, I think it was even Pawlenty, as crazy as some of his policies are, he said, I think the other day, I think he finally dropped his mem about Obama and said, look, Obama was born in this country, enough of this argument.
Don't you love that that's the craziest thing you can say these days?
Yeah,
Republican.
So
what?
That probably makes Tim Pawlenty persona non grata in the Republican primary. May have just, like, ended his, you know, his presidential aspirations. But that, I mean, that's how sort of debased everything has become, that you can't just you can't just argue over basic policies. It's got to be personal and smearing the other side, and it's just a problem.
And can there be any better, you know, a worse example, you know, in the news today as to this, you know, the religious right in our country, this crazy preacher that burn the Koran. I mean, you know, the headline I'm reading today is Taliban exploits Afghan riots over Koran burning. I mean, this could get bigger and bigger because of one crazy religious right-winger in our country.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw that, it reminded me of, I think you remember a couple of years ago when there was a story in Newsweek about I guess, guards at Guantanamo that flushed the Quran down the toilet. And that caused, you know, all sorts of riots, and, you know, people died as a result of that. Well, people are going to die because of this idiot burning the Quran. And God knows why he was doing it in the first place. I mean, his argument also doesn't make any sense. And I would think that, you know, for religious people, people who are sort of truly understand religion, there's, I mean, that is a sin, what the guy was doing by burning another religion's religious books. I mean, there's, you see, I always like to sort of ask people, okay, you know, for people who really, you know, believe in religion, you know, what would Jesus do? Well, what would Jesus think of this, you know, numbskull down in Georgia who's burning somebody else's religious text? I mean, what would Jesus think of the idea that our government is going to cut off aid to the poor and to the neediest among us? That doesn't strike me as sort of adhering to the principles that so many Americans claim to want to adhere to.
Yeah. David, as usual, I could just lay in a hammock with you and talk all morning.
Someday we will do that, Stephanie.
But real quick before you go, I got to get your take on the, you know, the 9/11 trials, because I, you know, once again, I feel like this is, you know, a very, you know, important American core principle that we've caved on, that, you know, we've said our American justice system is not up to.
Yeah, I was, personally just so disheartened over that. And the fact of the matter is we have tried, I think, over, you know, nearly 200 people in civilian courts who were associated with terrorism. And you know, I thought the president was very clear in his election campaign about, okay, we're going to close Guantanamo and we're going to reinstitute sort of the Constitution and constitutional principles. And it's just, I mean, I think it gets back to sort of my issue with President Obama all along has been there is such an effort, I suppose, to sort of want to be conciliatory and sort of, you know, reach sort of middle ground and compromise. But I always thought the job of a president was to sort of use the bully pulpit to bring people towards your positions.
Yeah.
Say, you know what, this is what we stand for, and I'm going to use the megaphone of the presidency to convince Americans why I'm right.
Right, but this is Democrats that got scared, and it just, I know, it can be disheartening. Thank God for you and my hammock. I love you, David Schuster. I'll see you next time.
Love you, Stephanie. We'll talk soon.
All right. All right, honey. All right. Man. 19 minutes after the hour, back with Representative Adam Smith next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
This is too weird, man.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
She's crafty. She gets around. She's crafty.
Mm. 23 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Representative Adam Smith, one of our personal favorites from the great state of Washington, joins us now. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good, sir. So, first of all, there's going to be a meeting, correct, at the White House today. We're in the thick of the budget battle, correct?
Right, yes.
And go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, now, what are you hearing? What do you think is going to happen? Obviously, Speaker Boehner and Harry Reid and a couple others are going to go sit with the president. Is something going to get resolved by Friday, do you think, or no?
I'm not optimistic. I mean, the Republicans have insisted that we have to cut $100 billion out of the president's fiscal year 11 request, and it's like it's just an ideological thing for them. They don't care so much where the money comes from. They just want to be able to live up to their campaign promise, and they are prepared to shut down the government to do that over a very small amount of money that isn't going to make any difference whatsoever in the long term on the deficit and the debt. It will have a huge impact on the people who are getting cut in the short term, but it won't even begin to address what they claim they want to address. But it's an ideological point for them right now. They promised it, so they're just going to jam it through, whatever the cost. And if that cost is shutting down the government, then apparently that's something they're more than happy to do. And so if that gives you a sense, I'm not altogether optimistic.
But doesn't
we'll
sound like it.
Out.
Well, I mean, but I have to say, you know, despite whatever they say, they are still politicians, and they have to be looking at the you know, the poll numbers for the Tea Party itself and the number of people at these rallies. And are they really going to, you know, hold us hostage to this?
Well, you know, it's always amazing to me the ability of extreme ideologues to believe in the face of all evidence that everybody agrees with them. And I think if you sat down with the, you know, the hardcore right wingers in the Republican House, they would still argue that the people are with them. Those poll numbers and, you know, the very real, you know, statements that people have made. I think it's like 7 in 10 Americans don't want the government to shut down, the Tea Party's descending. I think they still believe that what they're doing is exactly what the American people want. It takes a while for it to sink in that there are people that disagree with you when you have such a narrow ideological perspective. But hopefully that will come to pass in the next couple of days. I don't think a lot of people understand the impact of shutting down the government, the impact it's going to have on all of our lives, including in particular some of the most vulnerable citizens in this country. So I think we need to get a deal done and move forward. And I'm just, you know, I just know that they have staked out a position that makes it very hard to do that. When compromise is by definition a dirty word, it makes it hard to compromise.
Yep.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
It's going to be a tough few days up here.
Congressman Smith, I know you're one of the good friends of Representative Gabrielle Giffords. You've been raising re-election money for her, maintaining contacts, you know, while she recuperates. Tell us how she's doing, and have you gone to visit? I think you were going to visit this week, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I was down there on Friday and Saturday, and she's doing great. I mean, she gets remarkably better every time I see her and every day. I mean, the brain is an amazing thing, how it recovers.
Mm-hmm.
And the two things that give me the biggest encouragement is I actually know a fair number of people who have gone through traumatic brain injuries of one kind or another, and how far back they are able to come in terms of physical ability and speech and cognitive is just incredible. And the second thing is, given where Gabby is at, you know, after such a short period of time, her doctors are very optimistic about her ability to recover all of those things. I mean, obviously,
wow,
she's not going to be back to 100% normal, but the progress she's made has surprised everyone and gets better every day. So still a very, very tragic situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're pleased that she's making the progress she is and really looking forward to having her back in Congress. And in the meantime, yes, I'm working with her staff. I went down to her district a week or so ago to visit a couple of bases down there. And, you know, the issues that she cares about on the Armed Services Committee, you know, science and energy alternatives and efficiencies, her staff are continuing to push those. And they're continuing to be very, very effective in representing her district in Arizona.
Yeah. Congressman, I know you have a vote coming up, so we don't have you for very long, but I did want to get your take on what's happening in Libya. I know that you, after this president's speech, said you thought the president clearly articulated his rationale and it's the right course. You also said it's important to note that many who urged them to act are now criticizing them for acting.
Go ahead. I mean, the Republicans, you know, I sat through the hearing when Secretary Gates came before our committee, and the Republicans it was just naked partisanship. It was basically whatever the president is doing, it must be wrong. And they could never acknowledge the fact, look, if the president had not acted, thousands of Libyans would be slaughtered, and Muammar Gaddafi would now be back in solid control of Libya. And, you know, the conservative principles, you know, we have to stand up for people who are fighting for freedom. You know, I just can't understand why they wouldn't look at this and see this as a clear case of people fighting for freedom against a brutal, repressive despot, and who, by the way, also has launched terrorist attacks against the United States.
Yeah.
Bombing and a number of other things.
You put your finger on it because it's President Obama doing it.
Right. And then the other thing is, you know, on the one hand, they're saying that he shouldn't have acted because of what is dragging us in. On the other hand, they say that we'd be better off with a full-scale military invasion and boots on the ground, which is dead wrong.
Exactly.
Congressmen in Libya are saying that they don't want U.S. boots on the ground because that strengthens Gaddafi's position. Look,
we've got
Gaddafi boxed in here. He is an international pariah.
Representative Smith, we're out of time. Thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you again soon. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, the Stephanie Miller Show.
Drunk news report from
Stephanie Miller.
You haven't had one of those since they canceled Passions. This should be good.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Ooh, let's get an update from Wisconsin. It's election day. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. I did the wrong line. Andy in Madison, go ahead. Hi, Andy.
Hey, good morning.
Good.
I just came back from the polling places, and it's a lot of activity there.
Yay.
And I heard on the radio this morning, like statewide, because it's not a major fall election, they're expecting 20%, but in the Madison area, they're saying like 65% turnout's anticipated.
Wow. Yeah. No, I mean, it's when have you ever seen a court election like this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be heavily skewed towards the satanic liberals in Madison, I think, so that's good.
Yes, you Satan worshippers can always be counted on.
Madison, Wisconsin, where you expect those people to be communing with Satan up there in the Madison, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh. Here we are again, Aldous in Madison. Hi, Aldous.
Hey, yeah, specifically in November when we had such low turnout here, 7:30 a.m. when I voted, we only had 40 votes in. This morning at 7:30, there were 105 when I voted already.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is tremendously large turnout here in Madison.
Awesome. Awesome, Aldous. That's great. Terrific. All right, yes, get out and vote. They're saying this is the first referendum, of course, on Governor Walker. Mm-hmm. We had Joanne Kloppenburg on. She is... crazy qualified, for God's sake.
Yeah.
She was. We had her on. She's. I can't remember her entire resume. It was wow.
And the interview was like a Supreme Court hearing. You know, she couldn't answer any specific questions.
We all know who's who and what's what. This in normal times, they're saying, would have been, of course, a low-budget, nonpartisan race between Justice David Prosser and his challenger, Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg. It's become, obviously, much more than that, as our two callers were just telling us, a huge voter turnout expected today. Pro-Walker supporters, of course, are casting their votes for Prosser. Those who oppose the governor will line up behind Kloppenburg. It's a 10-year term, you know, on the Supreme Court.
I've heard.
Perhaps tipping the balance on the court. The signs contain a mix of anti-union. I love this one. Protect taxpayers, not unions. Because, you know, people in unions don't pay taxes.
No.
You know that's my,
that's
my
your,
little bugaboo.
It is.
Yes. Just my favorite way of dividing people. Yeah, in the votes in the blocks surrounding that rally, though, yard signs with anti-Walker messages stop Walker vote Kloppenburg. On Sunday, check this out. I don't understand this. On Sunday, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel endorsed Prosser, although the editorial did suggest Prosser probably shouldn't have called the state's Chief Justice Shirley Abramson a bitch. It also chastised the justice for releasing a statement saying his decisions, quote-unquote, compliment Walker.
Ooh.
The paper suggested that maybe Prosser, who was appointed by former Republican Governor Tommy Thompson, should take some anger management courses and probably shouldn't be so political. The paper finally concluded that Prosser, who proudly proclaims his pro-life stance on abortion, has shown an independent streak. How is that independent?
I don't know.
Well, we're endorsing him anyway. What? Sarah Palin, there's the big one, just endorsed Prosser. That tells you all you need to know. The little Twitter queen chimed in on Wisconsin today. This was the other big story out of Wisconsin. Former Wisconsin Democratic Governor Patrick Lucey, he's in his 90s.
Uh-huh.
He resigned his position as honorary chairman of Prosser's campaign and threw his support to Kloppenburg.
Wow.
He cited Prosser's disturbing distemper. There's a shot for that. And a lack of civility before making the late campaign switch. In fact, most political pundits believe Prosser would have breezed through in more normal times in Wisconsin, but this, as you know, is a new normal in Wisconsin. Outside organizations have spent more than $2 million in this race. There's one anti-Kloppenburg ad where she's described as an environmental extremist who once jailed an 80-year-old farmer who refused to plant state-mandated grasses. The ad on PolitiFact... It's the nonpartisan fact-checking.
They're great.
Ad labeled Pants on Fire. Pants on Fire lie.
You're a lying sack of crap. You're a lying sack of crap. You're a lying, scheming, stinking, nasty sack of liquid crap.
Yeah, the typical...
You're a liar.
Mm-hmm.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Mm-hmm. That was PolitiFact. That was their statement.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, PolitiFact. One woman quoted in the article, Hansen, she's a Democrat, said, "You have to try to learn to get along. I'm on the library board and in a book club with the chairwoman of the Republican Party. We respect our friendship and want to preserve it. How do you do that? We never talk politics." That's the new rule in my family, too.
Yeah, your brother keeps breaking that rule, though.
It's the new rule. There's no talking about politics anymore. David Schuster was just saying this. It really, just when you think, oh, politics has always been nasty. No, it's gotten to a new level of nasty and heated and, you know. Newsbusters targeted me on Monday. I told the delightful, hilarious story of my mother's masturbating bird. Republican mom's bird who masturbates to Fox News.
Your mom is very proud of that bird.
Well, she told me the story, knowing that I would talk about it. And they called me brain damaged and a moron.
They wagged their finger at you.
They wished my brother wasn't so incompetent at hanging me as a child. Wow, that's the first time I had death retroactively wished on me.
Yeah, isn't that kind of a death threat? Isn't that kind of a death threat from newsbusters?
They're saying they wish I had died as a child, so presumably I would never
it's
have
a death
gotten.
Wish.
Yes, so that I would never have gotten a radio show. All right.
Doesn't sound like they're for free speech. They want to silence people on the left.
By the way, I don't know what this tells you, but looky here. Prosser supporters. A lot of the Koch suckers.
Of course.
Yes, a lot of Koch brother funded groups. Which, oh, by the way, that's what Michael in L.A. wants to talk about. I asked you to send me this story from the L.A. Times. Kind of a hilarious story about something the Koch brothers funded.
Yeah.
Michael in L.A., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes,
hey, Mike.
It was a rut-row moment.
Yeah, it was. Yes.
Most definitely.
Tell the story.
The Koch brothers, they funded this right-winger to disprove global warming caused by industry and cars and stuff like that.
Yes.
Because you know how the Koch brothers are.
Yes.
And this guy went and checked all these facts, and he testified in front of Congress. Oops, global warming does exist. That is the reason.
Well, that's some Koch brother money just thrown down a hole.
Koch brothers.
Wasn't it hilarious? Did you read it in the LA Times yesterday? Michael?
Oh, I'm sorry, what was
did
that?
Did you read it in the LA Times yesterday?
Oh, yeah, I read it in the LA Times.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, T and then a he. This is what I see, and I texted you. I'm
yes.
Send me the story. I love it when the Koch brothers waste money. the headline is, Critics Review Unexpectedly Support Scientific Consensus on Global Warming.
Oops.
Don't you hate when you spend perfectly good money for junk science and they come back with real science? No! As Michael says, a rut-row moment.
Yeah, it just proves Republicans and science, not so much.
No.
Computer says no.
A team of UC Berkeley physicists and statisticians that set out to challenge the science.
Well, it's Berkeley.
Well. Sent out to challenge the scientific consensus on global warming. you can't even pay junk scientists enough anymore. That set out to challenge the scientific consensus on global warming is finding its data crunching effort is producing results nearly identical to those underlying the prevailing view. What? Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
The Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Project was launched by physics professor Richard Muller, a longtime critic of government-led climate studies, to address what he called the legitimate concerns of skeptics who believe that global warming is exaggerated.
Yeah.
He unexpectedly, though, told a congressional hearing last week that the work of the three principal groups that have analyzed the temperature trends underlying climate science is excellent. We see a global warming trend that is very similar to that previously reported by the other groups. The hearing was called by Republican leaders of the House Science and Technology Committee. Oh, there is kind of a contradiction in terms, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Who have expressed doubts about the integrity of climate science is one of the several inquiries in recent weeks as the EPA's efforts to curb planet heating emissions from industrial plants and motor vehicles have come under strenuous attack in Congress. The Berkeley Project's biggest private backer at $150,000, the Charles Koch Charitable Foundation. Oil billionaires Charles and David Koch, of course, the nation's most prominent funders of efforts to prevent curbs on the burning of fossil fuels, the largest contributor to planet warming greenhouse gases. Oh, dear.
Uh-oh.
Tea and then a he. One atmospheric scientist said Mueller's statement to Congress was honorable in recognizing that the previous temperature reconstructions basically got it right. Willingness to revise views in the face of empirical data is the hallmark of the good scientific process. But conservative critics who had expected Mueller's group to demonstrate a bias among client scientists reacted with disappointment. I'm sure Fox News was all over this, weren't they? Did they cover this? No? No. Anthony Watts, a former TV weatherman who runs the skeptic blog WattsUpWithThat.com.
Oh, see, that's
that
funny
guy.
Because
he's
it's
a weatherman.
Yeah.
He wrote that the Berkeley group is releasing results that are not fully working and debugged yet. But most normal science political theater is like that. That's what he... Yeah, dismissed this latest thing. Okay.
Yeah, but it was a study commissioned by right-wing lunatics.
$150,000 of perfectly good Koch money pissed away.
Hooray!
Okay, let's go to a...
Well, you're gleeful.
A little bit. Tina and Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey there. So that's great news about that everyone's voting, and there's a lot of people that have early voted also. But the other really important thing that's on the ballot today is, for Dane County anyway, where Madison is, as you know, that Citizens United case that says corporations can spend whatever they want. Well, there's a referendum asking, do you feel that the Constitution should be changed so that a corporation isn't defined as a person, so that, you know, they don't have free speech under the Constitution. So everyone wants to, the wording is really weird, so they want to vote yes if they think that this corporate stuff has to stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, obviously nationwide, even Tina, in polling, you know, the vast majority of Americans are not for the Citizens United ruling. So anyway, thank you, Tina. All right. Lots of voters. Voters out early today in Wisconsin.
Yep.
45 minutes after the hour, right back with Right Wing World on the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 50 minutes after the hour. Charlie Pierce, our buddy, our pal, Tuesday pal. Coming up next hour, Bob King, president of United Auto Workers of America, and then also Reverend Jim Wallace. We've got a lot going on today.
That's right, and you can see it all at ustream.tv/Stephanie Miller.
Hello. David in Washington State, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, David.
Hey, Stephanie. Hey, you guys. You know, everything that comes out of a Republican's mouth, and even including a teabagger, means the exact opposite. They don't care about the budget. It doesn't have anything to do with the budget. And when you look at the whole country, all the Republicans and teabaggers are reading from the same exact script. I mean, with a smile on their face, they can look at the camera. The camera's rep, John Boehner, Brian, all those people just smile and try to pass off these lies and these phony policies that have nothing to do with anything, but score them cheap points for their Terry Jones crowd.
They're
getting away with it. They're getting away with it at this point, but they've really pissed off a lot of people, including their own base.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, David, is that, you know, as I think, who was it, David Schuster, whoever was just on, mm-hmm. about this, you know, wisdom, and generally I think is true, that elections are won somewhere in the middle. And, you know, there's already a story in the paper today about how the Tea Party is, you know, could cause another Goldwater campaign, which I know a little something about. But I mean that they're the extremist right is sort of capturing the party.
And they're acting as if the midterms was a general election. I mean, Boehner and that smirk that he has on his face every time the cameras are up. I mean, it's incredible. I hope they don't sleep at night.
Yep.
I mean, they're so disgusting. They're nasty. They're cruel. What do they do to address, you know, the so-called budget issues? Go after disabled.
They take mosquito nets away from infants with malaria. Why? What's cruel about that? All right, we'll talk to Reverend Jim Wallace about that in just a bit. Let's dive into the Right Wing World, shall we, kids? Stuart Varney on Brian Kilmeade's radio show. Oh, he's not going to be asked to come back, I don't think.
What I do not want, however, is to shut the government down, have the Republicans blamed for it, and we get a second Obama term in 2012. We should really try to avoid that.
Oops, did he just... by accident admit that it would be the Republicans' fault if the government were to shut down? Oh, dear. And that's got to be quite a cream of the crop list that gets to fill in for Brian Kilmeade on his radio show.
No, he was a guest on Brian Kilmeade's show.
Oh!
Yeah, you know, Brian Kilmeade.
That's a very select
booking
group.
Booking those Fox hosts.
Hi, Jim. Hello. Yeah, who's really up to that task of taking over for Brian Kilmeade? Okay.
But... they must not have a good booking department at the Brian Kilmeade show, because they just walk across the hall and get Stuart Varney. What?
Hey, Varney.
That's not hard.
Yeah, they would have done better with the other Varney. Okay.
Can you walk across the hall? No, actually. Indisposed.
Noted feminist Rush Limbaugh on What Chicks Dig.
What do women really want?
You.
So much for the feminazi movement.
What?
What women want is... to be taken care of by government. Women define security as the government taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all the chicks' fault.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That's, well, you know, that's what I mostly suck, Jim, is the government teat.
Well,
what? That's, okay, let's.
Yeah, my mind went all kinds of places with that.
All right. Glenn Beck on the radio.
I think we could probably do a show on the facts that are not true. How about just the stuff that was said about Obamacare and the death panels? That there's no rationing ever going to happen. How about that one? How about just the fact that Obama is not surrounded by socialists? How about the fact that Van Jones is just a normal guy, a nice guy? Why are they picking on him? Mm-hmm. He has nothing. Oh, wait, he's a 9/11 truther and a...
First of all, no, he's not.
Right.
He never even signed that website, whatever, with questions about 9/11, but okay. And by the way, we've had him on several times. He really is kind of a normal, nice guy.
Yeah, he's a delight.
What are other socialists is Obama surrounding himself with? Yeah. Name one. I'd sure like there to be one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bernie Sanders, that's it.
Yeah, but he's not an
But he doesn't listen to him.
No, of course not.
He doesn't listen to him at all, really.
Right. Oh, God. Donald Trump. Oh, dear.
Iran is going to take over Iraq, and if that's going to happen, we should just stay there and take the oil. They want the oil.
Oh.
And why should we? We denuded Iraq. Iran's going to walk in, take over the second largest oil fields in the world. That's going to happen. That would mean that all of those soldiers that have died and been wounded and everything else would have died in vain,
right.
And I don't want that to happen.
Oh, so we went in there for the oil.
He went on to say, I want their parents and their families to be proud. Because they aren't proud of them now. They would only be proud if we went in and if we reinvaded and then took their oil, that would...
You know what was preventing Iran from taking over Iraq? Saddam Hussein, whom we supported against Iran. Right?
Yes. But even O'Reilly mocked Trump's policy on Fox and Friends. He said, you'd basically be reinvading the country you already invaded to try and get their oil. Come on, can you imagine the world reaction to that?
Yeah.
What is happening? Bill O'Reilly is becoming the voice of reason on Fox News. No. Oh. Okay, Jesse Peterson on Cavuto.
If it's possible to turn over in your grave, I believe that Dr. King is turning over in his grave today. For Jesse Jackson and others to take his movement to taste its purpose and use it for personal gain, I have to say, Neil, it's nothing less than evil.
What is he talking about?
I don't. Jesse Jackson
progressives
marched
using,
with Martin Luther King. So how
he's accusing progressives of co-opting Dr. Martin Luther King's movement.
Oh, to make it about stuff like civil rights.
Movement. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was specifically about unions.
Yes.
Yeah. They're trying to make it now about civil rights and workers' rights. What would Dr. King think about?
God.
Oh, boy. Just when you think... You know what it is? It's like we get to like layers of stupid in the right-wing lasagna, and then that means you end with Ducey and Carlson.
Oh, no.
President George W. Bush dealt with low approval ratings his last years in office. So what can President Obama learn from his predecessor?
Some people would say that's a loaded question. Well, joining us is a woman with first-hand knowledge, former First Lady Laura. I was just going to say, I mean, a lot of people would say, specifically Republicans, that President Obama could learn a lot from your husband, President Bush.
Well, unfortunately, he has.
Uh-oh.
All right.
Dig.
Yeah. Oh, dear God. Yes. Who couldn't learn from George W. Bush?
And what's Steve Ducey implying there, that... President Obama's approval ratings are as low as Bush's was in the last few years?
No, they're not.
No, they're not. They're nowhere near that low.
No.
Ducey is an idiot.
Wow.
And
all
right. This is his first term. They're assuming he's going to be over in 2012.
Yeah. All right. By the way, the president's running again. Who knew? I got an email. Just me.
I got that email, too.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
No, you didn't.
I support the president, too, you know.
Michelle Bachmann, she's gearing up for. She got Mike Huckabee's Iowa political director.
Mm.
He'll be a Michelle Pack consultant as she gears up her run for the White House. The more money we raise, the more help we need. Bachmann's chief of staff said on Minnesota Public Radio. Oh well, that'll be gone soon. Michelle Bachmann's of the world, I guess I'll have to come on the Stephanie Miller Show to talk about her presidential aspirations.
I can see Plymouth Rock from my house.
58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Guys, your fellow Obama basher Charlie Pierce is coming up. Won't that be fun?
Yay.
Oh,
hooray.
1-800-STEP-12.
Stop it.
Phone number toll free from anywhere. And now, a story about a dog. Something to make me feel better. Who did you see the dog in Japan? Wow. Look at him. Oh, did you see him? He was on the ocean wreckage for 3 weeks
yeah.
after the tsunami. His name is Bond. 2 years old. Hello, Bond. He was rescued from drifting ocean debris. He jumped in his owner's wagged his tail after the reunion. Oh, God, I love those stories. Look at you, you godless atheist communist staring at me with nothing in your eyes.
Was
it a boy?
Okay. Yes, it's a good story.
Thank
Hooray.
You.
Meanwhile, they're dumping tons of radioactive waste into the ocean.
Oh, I read the thing, something like 5 million
water.
Times normal.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
Like, no.
Seven different, like, how many hundreds,
yeah.
thousands of tons of radioactive water.
Yeah.
Already.
It's not radioactive waste. There's a big difference.
Jim recommends a Geiger counter if you're going out for sushi in L.A. this weekend.
Not yet, but
yeah.
soon.
It's a little far away, and the Pacific Ocean is, the surface area is bigger than all of the landmass on Earth put together.
I could get radiation sickness with my mercury poisoning this time.
Yay.
StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoie, voice DD Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller.
Turns out Canada's turned off the radiation detectors, eh?
Why?
Because, there's not enough to worry about. So if your poutine's glowing in the dark, eh, just be glad you're not wasting electricity.
Poutine normally glows in the dark.
Need
that color of cheese doesn't exist in nature.
Oh, boy.
But
if
there's a radiation spill, just get a lot of serviettes and soak it right up, eh?
Serviettes, have they thought of that?
Serviettes.
They've thrown everything at it so far. Shredded newspaper, and what else did we say? Oh, like little like diapies. Chamois. They're trying those.
Someone get Vince on the phone.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah, and they threw a slap chop in there. That's what
you're going to love it.
Mm-hmm?
You're going to love my nuts.
You're going to love my radioactive nuts.
Okay.
What? That's what he says in the commercial.
I thought that was from the Barry Bonds trial. No, that's entirely different.
That's what Vince says in the commercial.
How about that? That's reason number one not to take steroids, right? Because your girlfriend's going to testify about your at some point and the size of them, you know?
Reasons.
That's embarrassing.
Actually, I auditioned for Vince once for some project. Didn't get it, but I made him laugh, so that was good.
Oh, good.
All right. The president's carny on Libya.
Our partnership in the coalition continues, and NATO will continue to fly sorties and take action. As the mission continues.
What do I love the most in any international crisis? The dictator's sons. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This, I love this story. It is so Godfather's, Jim. It's, there is a Sonny. There is a Michael.
Wow.
Yeah. There's infighting amongst the sons.
It's sibling the rivalry among Gaddafi's sons threatens possible peace plan. This is the greatest story ever. Who knew all these fun facts? Two of Muammar Gaddafi's sons are secretly offering to push their father aside and lead Libya toward democracy. However, the plan faces possible sabotage, and not only by rebels whose hatred of the whole Gaddafi family runs deep, but also, and perhaps even more, by a fierce, violent sibling rivalry from the dictator's other sons.
Oh?
Well, wait, there's more. Gaddafi's seven. He has seven sons. Wait, and there's a daughter. There's a Sofia Coppola. Hang on. Wait for this whole story. I love it. Gaddafi's seven sons are notorious for their playboy reputations. Hello. Brushes with the law.
What dictator sons aren't famous for their playboy reputations?
Brushes with the law, corruption, and family infighting. One son, not kidding, Hannibal. Hannibal Gaddafi. Hello.
Yeah.
What does he do, this man you see?
Do they bring him out with a mask? Hannibal has some anger problems.
Senator, love your suit.
I think he was named after the guy with the elephants.
One son, Hannibal, was arrested in 2008 for allegedly beating servants at a Geneva hotel. Who hasn't done that once? Another son, Sadi, was booted from a professional soccer team in Italy in 2003 after failing a drug test. The third-born, Metassum.
It's space number 63 on the periodic table.
Metassum was sent into exile in Egypt for years after he repositioned Libyan troops without his family's permission. Yeah, daddy gets mad when you
Son, Daddy gets mad when you reposition the troops.
I suppose them in embarrassing positions.
Yeah, he put bayonet guy in the wrong position and laying down guy. He repositioned Libya's troops without his family's permission and used live rounds during military exercises. No, that's not good. Sometimes the brothers have even come to blows. A U.S. diplomatic cable, a WikiLeak, compared the Gaddafi son's infighting to a Libyan soap opera and noted the whole family has been in a tailspin recently.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's a soap opera.
Someday, and that day may never come, I will ask you to do for me a favor.
Yeah. Seif. He's
Saif.
Saif. He's the Michael.
Yeah.
He was educated in London.
He's the one that's on TV all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm, right.
He's Michael Corleone. He was educated in London. He pushed for economic reform in Libya. Was even rumored to have an Israeli girlfriend.
Oh.
That's the Diane Keaton of the, huh? Who's the shiksa? Potassium. You can get a lot of that in bananas, I understand.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Has a reputation for being a hothead. Sonny. He's Sonny Corleone. They're going to send him to the toll booth. It's right. Going to...
I never saw The Godfather.
What?
What?
You're fired.
Sorry. What?
Oh, my God. Jim, we're not talking to him for the rest of the show. Yeah, I don't either.
That was a 70s movie.
Shut up.
What?
Ancient history.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Gaddafi family... Okay, here we go. The Gaddafi family's best hope for... Wait, who am I thinking? Oh, Talia Shire! Here we go! The Gaddafi family's best hope for reconciliation might come in the form of the Libyan leader's only daughter, Aisha. I don't... Maybe named after Aisha Tyler. This just gets betterer and betterer. A lawyer who served unsuccessfully on Saddam Hussein's defense team. Yeah, that didn't go well.
No.
Oh, well. It was like Sofia Coppola got really bad reviews in one of the first The Godfather movies. See? And she's come around since then. So what? You have one guy hung that you defended. Who is better known in the Arab press as the Claudia Schiffer of North Africa.
Wow.
At one point, Gaddafi appointed Aisha as the minder for the most troublesome of her brothers. She was tasked with monitoring the activities of the ne'er-do-wells in her family, according to another WikiLeak. One of the tasks that befell Aisha Gaddafi in 2008 was mediating a diplomatic row that exploded between Switzerland and Libya after her brother Hannibal again was arrested in Geneva. That Hannibal, I swear to God.
He's trying to cross the Alps with his elephants.
He is ruining the reputation of his family, that damn Hannibal.
That's why he was
named
Geneva.
Him Hannibal.
Right. He's getting rounding up the elephants from the Bern Zoo.
Yeah.
And sent him over the Alps.
I love that story so much. Okay. Representative Buck McKeon.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Is it what it is? What he is or what he does?
A guy named Buck.
Mm-hmm. Buck Turgidson.
Mm-hmm.
Republican of California.
I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair messed. I'm saying 10 to 20 million dead tops. Right on the brakes.
Maybe we ought to think about all of these things before we start blowing things up, because that seems to be what we've been doing lately. We blow something up, then we go back and rebuild it.
He's the opposite of
lately? Buckley. Lately? You mean since President Obama's president?
Yes, that's when that started.
Oh. Hmm. Buddy, that's not what I remember. I remember blowing up lots of things real good when George Bush was president.
Yes.
And for absolutely no reason. Okay. Franco Frattini, Italian foreign minister.
I love his SpaghettiOs.
That's the Chico Marx character.
Any solution for the future of Libya has a precondition that Gaddafi's regime leaves and is out, and Gaddafi himself and the family leaves the country.
There's a bus leaving Tripoli in half an hour. I want you to be under it.
Hey, what's the matter, you?
Was that Guido Sarducci, seriously? Was that really the Italian? Okay, if you say so. All right. Adrian in Madison as we check in on the Supreme Court election today. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I'm not really reporting on the Supreme Court election. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Governor Walker and how or why he should go, because he can't do anything right at the moment.
Yes.
There were a couple
of the voters of Wisconsin agree with you. If the election were held today, he'd lose. Yeah.
Well, certainly based on all the signs that I'm seeing in people's yards, the people of Madison, Wisconsin, agree with me. But there are a couple of things that were in the news yesterday. One was this story about a guy called David Duchaine, who managed to get a job even under Walker, even though he has two DUIs, has absolutely no qualifications and no experience. But it just so happens his dad gave about $100,000 to Walker's campaign.
Ah. Beautiful.
But that was one story that hit the news yesterday. And then another one was actually something that Walker was doing that is probably a very good thing. And that is that he's giving about $400,000 to a town up in the north of Wisconsin so that a creamery up there can expand. This will probably enhance the economy. It'll probably do wonders for this company being able to employ people in the future. It's actually the kind of conservative policy that I would have supported back home in Britain. But because of all the other stuff that's going on under the Walker campaign or under the Walker regime, this obviously has been seen by a lot of people as being, oh, my God, something else is going on. He's giving $400,000 to a company.
Is it a Coke dairy? I'm just guessing that it's something to do with Coke Brothers. I don't know. All right, Sam in Jacksonville real quick. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how are you, Stephanie?
Good, go ahead.
Good. I think this is Obama's big moment with the Republicans and Rand Paul coming out with all their things, going after Medicare, Medicaid, and whatnot.
Yes.
If Obama lets us down this time, like he's let us down with the tax cuts and quite a few other things, that I think this is his moment, and he needs to come through for us. And if he doesn't, we need to find another Democratic candidate.
For the love of God. Yeah. All right, Sam. Yes, good idea. Let's primary the president. I think that's a dandy idea.
Hate that idea.
Better, let's impeach him. I think that's a good idea. Bully. Bully on Dennis Kucinich for thinking of it. Okay. I'm right. I'm winded.
What would you say?
I got hit in the stomach with a battle ball. All right.
What would you say to Dennis Kucinich if he were on the line right now?
I'd say, why? What a spectacular idea.
Of course you
they
would.
They can't find a candidate to beat the president. Why don't we impeach him ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
18 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 23 minutes after the hour, Sue in Rockville, Maryland. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Sue.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning,
babe. Listen, we know that the press has a very liberal bias, right, according to the right wing. And in spite of themselves, they did 24-7 wall-to-wall coverage of about 100 people and about 100 press covering 100 teabaggers last week, right?
Yep.
So yesterday, when 2,000 people in D.C. demonstrated in D.C., I went to the Koch brothers' office to protest them, you can imagine the kind of coverage we got, especially our local and national Washington Post, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nada, I'm guessing.
You can play crickets now. A word, not a line, nothing. Because after all, the liberal press is always stoking, you know, what we, you know, do. And this is why, sadly, President Obama has no idea what's really going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at the... Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it's just so frustrating. When this is the time he can fight, this is a fight he can win, you fear again.
You're talking about the budget or...
I mean, specifically about the budget, when people have made it abundantly clear, and Paul Ryan is making it abundantly clear that he wants to kill Medicaid, and I just fear at this point that they're just going to keep negotiating when these people just keep changing the goalposts, and it's just very disheartening.
Well, yeah, except that I think the good Eddie Munster, I don't think his plan is actually going to really go well politically. I mean, literally, you're right. That's what he's saying. It's like, let's kill Medicaid, and if you're not for that, then you're a coward. I mean, you know.
But and the thing about it is that again, we always operate from the. I just don't know what's gone on with our senators and with our congressmen. I mean, we literally need to clone Anthony Weiner and get about another 1,000 of them, because who is fighting for us? I just don't. I will of course vote for Obama. There is no alternative. But I who is going to work, really stand up? He is the leader of the Democratic Party.
Well, you know,
and
my hope
to stand up for us.
My hope, Sue, is that, you know, obviously you look at all these Republican governors and each and every one of them, I mean, that's unprecedented, isn't it? They would all lose by some of them 20 points if the election was held today. I've never heard of that. Have you? I mean, I just think between that and the Tea Party, they are really overreaching. And you know, we may have a landslide on our side of epic proportions, which, you know, if we could give him a bunch more Democrats, we could get a lot of the stuff that we want.
And again, every poll last week that came out, except for one, showed the president's approval over 50%.
Yep.
But what got the press? Quinnipiac, the conservative poll that showed him at 43, which was a totally biased poll.
Yep, just talked with Eric Wallert about this yesterday. Absolutely. All right, honey, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Marina in Madison on the budget as well, and Paul Ryan. Hey, Marina, or Myrna, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I have a long time. Yeah, you know, I just heard about this yesterday, I think, on Randy. And I'm astonished that somebody wants to get rid of Medicare and Medicaid and inflict that kind of pain and suffering on people. And what I want to know is, when did this level of callousness become fashionable? How did this happen?
Well, I mean, but Myrna, don't you think this is going to be an issue that is not going to go well for them? My mom, I always joke about, but my 88-year-old Republican mom, who's, you know, Fox News on 24/7, she's on Medicare. I mean, you know what I mean?
Everybody knows somebody on Medicare.
That's what I mean, and she has cancer. I mean, it's like, you know, let's see how this plays, whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean, it's just, we'll get to that later. We need to get our Eddie Munster music ready for Paul Ryan plan. All right. Speaking of right-wing lunatics, hey, how about that, Pastor Yosemite Sam? Thanks a lot, buddy. Taliban exploits Afghan riots over Koran burning. One clear beneficiary has emerged from the wave of deadly riots that swept Afghanistan after members of a Florida evangelical church burned a copy of the Koran. The Taliban.
Great.
The insurgents, according to Afghan and Western officials, have been able to exploit the ongoing tumult, using the riots as cover for attacks against Western and government targets and reaping propaganda benefits by allowing themselves aligning themselves with popular fury over the desecration of the Muslim holy book. Moreover, the violence has fueled tension among NATO allies.
Great.
One crazy preacher has been able to accomplish all this. Thank you. Nicely done. On Sunday, Afghans took to the streets for a third straight day. The riots have tapped a well of anti-foreign and particularly anti-American sentiment that exists even among Afghans who do not condone the deaths that have occurred. Three-day death toll was at 22.
Oh, my God.
Many Afghans were baffled at what they considered an overt act of blasphemy could be deemed a permissible expression of political opinion. How can you do something that you know is going to cause violence and not be held accountable, said one Kabul teacher. Even my littlest pupils know better than this. The Taliban released a statement that depicted the West as infidels and Karzai security forces as hirelings doing foreigners' bidding in their attempts to quell the violence. This is unhelpful. Can I just say,
it is.
Can I just say in every way that I am disappointed? I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I said
disappointed.
Thank you. I'm just saying. Jim, I don't know, but isn't this awfully close to yelling fire in a crowded theater?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is, you know, I guess I'm still in shock over this whole thing. All right, lots more to get to. We've got the other big announcement, obviously, in a related story, yielding to political opposition. Erica Holder announced that the 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four alleged henchmen were referred to a military commission for trial rather than to a civilian federal court in New York. We will talk about that with Charlie Pearson much more. I'm not happy about that.
Wow. Are you actually criticizing the administration?
Yes. In the 29 minutes.
Well, I hope you're not clappy.
No.
See a doctor about that.
29 minutes after the hour, right back with Charlie Pierce on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
My biological clock is ticking like a bomb. I call my uterus the Hurt Locker.
Ha!
Oh, boy. 34 minutes after the hour. Reverend Jim Wallace coming up in just a bit. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number toll free from anywhere. But it's Tuesday, kids. You know.
There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, the funniest writer in the world, from the Boston Globe.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Wah, 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 wah. Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm just splendid. Couldn't be happier if I was twins.
So I saved the non-happy clappiness for you. I am not happy. Eric Holder yesterday, Attorney General. Let's start with that. Talking about the 9/11 suspects. Eric Holder yesterday. Eric Holder, here he is.
Today,
Eric Holder.
I am referring the cases of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Waleed Mohammed bin Attash, Ramzi bin Al-Shib, Ali Abdul Aziz Ali, and Mustafa Ahmed Hawassawi to the Department of Defense to proceed in military commissions.
So what's your take on that, Charlie?
I think everybody was a coward, everybody involved, including the people who elected the people who made this wonderful reversal of decision possible. Well, I mean, I just think there is absolutely no reason why you cannot try these guys in a civilian court, except for a bunch of stage cowardice by a bunch of people seeking political advantage. It's revolting.
Well, and once again, you know, we've discussed this frustration that we had on health care. It's Democrats, you know. It was the few Democrats that got scared politically. You know, obviously everybody played the tape yesterday of President Obama signing the order to close Gitmo, and it... You know, here we go again with this, you know, the political pressure. Maybe I have a different take on it, Charlie. You know, as you know, my dad was an assistant prosecutor at Nuremberg. I guess I don't get the basic argument when, those were war criminals. That was a war. You know, obviously Clinton tried successfully in regular courts all of the terrorists that we've caught, right?
Right, and we were enormously proud of what we did, what your dad did, and what everyone did at Nuremberg. That was a real shining moment for us,
mm-hmm.
that you could give, you know, civilian justice to military criminals. And now we just, you know, now because I don't know, because you know we're a nation that doesn't trust the Constitution to do pretty much anything anymore. You know, we're stuck with stuff like this. And I mean, and yeah, I think the leadership from the White House and the executive branch could have been stronger on this. But Congress went around and passed laws against this.
Well, exactly. And
you know, I mean,
Holder,
it's not like Holder's backing down in the face of nasty speeches and angry words. He's backing down in the face of Congress going around passing laws against this.
Well, right. And he called the congressional restrictions unwise and unwarranted, said a legislative body cannot make prosecutorial decisions. He said he's still convinced the earlier decision was the right one. Another legal expert said the commissions are sure to be subject to continuous legal challenges and delays. Their outcomes will not be seen as legitimate. That's not justice.
Yeah, I don't know that they won't be seen as legitimate. I think the country's going to look at this with a very big yawn and roll over and hit the remote control and watch Dancing with the Stars. But I think one of the obvious problems you have here is they don't want to try these in civilian courts because they know exactly what was done to these guys and they don't want this to come out. Most of the evidence will be inadmissible anyway.
Yeah.
They don't want to be sitting in a civilian court with some judge looking at the stuff saying, "I can't admit this."
Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, again, you know, I can't imagine what my dad would think. It's like, oh, we're the ones that did the torturing, so we can't do this in a regular court now because, you know, I mean, you've got to listen to Rumsfeld yesterday.
Military commissions were criticized as though they were kangaroo courts and unfair and irresponsible. Here we are right back using them in a manner that is appropriate, and it's too bad that all those many, many, many months were wasted. And all that criticism against the Bush administration was so misplaced.
Wow.
You know who was misplaced? Donald Rumsfeld at the Department of Defense. That was misplaced.
Yes. Yes, that's a known, as they say. So, Charlie, this is the big breaking news. The President Obama's running for president again.
That's terrific. And I think by the fall of 2012, I'll be able to muster the enthusiasm I had to vote for Walter Mondale in 1984.
This is
things were going so well.
I mean, seriously, though, look at this Republican field. I mean, honestly, there was a story I was reading about the Tea Party. Tea Party affair could doom GOP. And here we go with my dad again, but making comparisons to Goldwater. That it could be a Goldwater year for Republicans. Look at the candidates so far that have come forward.
I think presidentially they're in big trouble. I think there's a reason why none of these guys have declared yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're waiting for nobody wants to be the first one to step out of the herd of clowns.
If they do, they lose their job with Fox News.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Although I'm not entirely sure. Hasn't Herman Cain has declared, right?
I don't know. Has he? I don't think anyone's declared, actually.
Let me Google that real quick.
Yeah.
I thought the pizza guy had.
pizza guy's in. Yeah, I believe Polenti was the only one that responded yesterday. We have that, the Tim Pawlenty video when the president declared. From the former governor of Minnesota.
How can America win the future when we're losing the present? In order for America to take a new direction, it's going to take a new president.
Well, you need a new sound engineer, first of all.
Who's going to be Tim Pawlenty's vice president? Michael Bay?
Yeah. You can make bridges blow up real good.
Hey, I'll say. Look at Donald Trump. It's right now it's a race to out crazy each other, isn't
well,
it?
You've got two people, Donald Trump and the former ex half term governor of Alaska who are in it for the bucks and to promote themselves and to sell whatever it is that they're going to sell next. So you've got this kind of performance quotient in the field that's throwing everybody else off. But if they're looking around, I'll tell you, if they're not nervous about the fact that Michelle Bachmann's raised more money than anybody else, including Mitt Romney, in the last quarter, they should be.
Because the
preliminary electorate on the Republican side in Iowa is Lord of the Flies.
Yeah,
there's a pig's head up on a stick out there.
They're saying President Obama is expected to raise $1 billion. I mean,
are we happy about that, by the way?
No, but I mean, it's unprecedented, I guess, in U.S. politics. But, you know, this is where we are, right? Between Citizens United.
This is your Citizens United universe.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wonder how many of those dollar bills will have, like, Lloyd Blankfein's face on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Obama expected to file campaign papers with the FEC as early as Monday. One would hope he's going to bring his birth certificate, because that could be a scandal there.
How much do you want to bet there will be at least one person who makes that point seriously next week?
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee it.
Exactly. Well, I love this. One Republican operative reflected on his party's lack of any strong White House contender and said Obama could win if he raises a dollar. And that's a Republican.
Yeah,
I think
they're right, but I look up, but then again, I look at the way the Senate breaks, and if I'm a Democrat, I'm not real happy. He's probably going to win. He's probably going to win fairly easily, but I don't know if he's going to sweep anybody else in.
Yeah, well,
I'm far more interested. I'm actually far more interested this week in the election for that judge out in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we've been getting reports that turnout is unprecedented, particularly for a Supreme Court. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I think he may lose, and I think that then we'll see what the interpretation game is.
Right.
You know, if there are people who are going to argue, well, the guy's just a crank anyway, but if it can be interpreted as the first, you know, the first shot in the counter-revolution out there, you know, I think, you know, people like, you know, say Representative Randy Hopper are going to be very nervous. By mm-hmm. A great name, by the way.
For
an adulterous Paul, fabulous.
Yeah.
Prosser, he called one of the female justices a bitch. And yeah. The best sign I saw today is bitches for Kloppenburg. Women notoriously prickly about that.
Especially hearing it from Randy Hoppers.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that race and a lot of them, I mean, Charlie, that's got to, in your history of covering politics, I mean, that's pretty unprecedented, isn't it, that all of these Republican governors that have, you know, overreached like this, they would all lose, some of them by 20 points if the elections were held today. How long have they been in?
I don't know how often in my life that's actually been polled.
Yeah,
you know, this isn't a new thing to me. This, you know, the buyer's remorse polls.
Right.
But I mean, it's very plainly a coordinated attempt on all their parts to get as much of their agenda done as they can before the electoral roof falls in.
Right.
And they're counting on a short attention span in the electorate that, you know, in 2 years, or, you know, maybe less in Walker's case, but because I don't know that there's any move to recall anybody else. But I'll tell you, the other thing that this is doing is I think it's scaring Mitch Daniels out of the race.
Ah, interesting.
I think he's got, he's tending to his own backyard right now.
Yeah. Charlie, what about the budget showdown? I mean, it's just we've been hearing this and hearing this, and now I'm hearing again today, like, oh, there might be one more continuing resolution. I mean, where are we going with this? We've got till Friday now.
If you can figure it out, I don't know. I mean, John Boehner is a prisoner of at least part of his own caucus. Paul Ryan is completely out of his mind, and is being treated like a sage when he ought to be treated like the guy who's on a steam grate screaming about the Rockefellers.
Yeah,
the guy simply wants to eliminate Medicaid. Period.
Charlie, this is
that's what he wants.
But
okay?
See, this is what makes me crazy. It's not just that; it's the quote unquote liberal media how they treat these guys like, oh, he's such a breath of fresh air, like Chris Christie. Like, this love is like, oh, he's so refreshing. Like, when they blurt out these horrible ideas, the mainstream press goes, oh, look how refreshing that is.
Chris, we're hearing a lot now about Paul Ryan's courage, as though it's courageous to throw poor people under the bus in this country. It takes a lot of guts for a Republican congressman with a complete with a lifetime sinecure in the House to, like, do nasty things to poor people. we've really got a kind of new politics of sadism in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we're hurting people for the sake of hurting people because we don't like them very much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. It's playing to our worst instincts. But
again, why this guy was invited to the White House with a sit down by the President of the United States, I have no idea.
We will see if any of his bronzer has been cried off after the meeting. We'll see how things went today with the boner.
I'll tell you, as strange as he is, and as much trouble he is, I don't think he's driving the train right now.
No, he's not.
Oh yeah,
he's lost control.
No, I mean that was a press conference for the Tea Party. Listen, we only control one half of one third of the government. Give me
right after the election, he said, "Yeah, we have a mandate," and now he says, "Oh, we only control one half of one third of the government."
Yes.
Well, you don't even control that, pal.
He's not in control.
Caucus right now.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. All right, Charlie Pierce.
By the way,
yes.
Herman Cain, former Godfather's Pizza CEO,
yes,
has only formed a presidential exploratory committee.
Don't you love those, Charlie?
What's he doing? Exploring Holiday Inns? I mean, he's all over the country right now.
Don't you love that? I was saying it's like when you pass the note in school. Do you like me? Check yes or no. Like, what? What's an exploratory committee?
It's the presidential sex test. Have you touched it yet?
Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America from the Boston Globe. See you next week, honey.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Aw.
Hey, yay. All right.
That was actually good. We didn't fight.
I kept him positive.
Yeah.
I skillfully navigated him.
Well, that's because you criticized the president on something.
Oh, I threw him a bone. 46 minutes after the hour.
And you bone here.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Join the party. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Nicholas in San Francisco. Hi, Nick. Welcome.
Yeah, I think we need to turn this whole beat around because, you know, that we are one protest that were all over the country. Well, we had one in Berkeley. We had one in Oakland, California. We had one in San Francisco. There were 5,000 people in San Francisco that started at the Banksters of America building, then went to the Chase building, and then went to the Wells Fargo building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up at the Federal Reserve here in San Francisco. 5,000 people
Wow.
for 2 hours protesting.
And this is the first I've heard of it.
Not one media outlet in anywhere in San Francisco, no the TV, no radio, other than this
Green 960. Yep.
Green 960, thank you. And nothing.
Wow.
Nothing.
Wow.
And it's just so.
And they cover the 100 teabaggers. I mean, it's just that's like Eric Bollard said to us, like, how small do they have to get? Which minivan has to play at the next gathering of the Tea Party before people, you know, the media goes, this is not a story anymore. This is a bunch of crazies. I think it may be Minnie Queen. I think you're right. Patrick in San Francisco. Hey, Pat.
Hi, just to echo what he was saying, I was at the event in San Francisco yesterday, and so this morning I'm actually calling all of the mainstream outlets and saying, why didn't you have that on the front page? Why didn't you send a reporter out there? And I think if all of us do that for all the events that we attended, we can start getting them to stop covering the ridiculous Tea Party gathering and start covering our event.
Yep, exactly.
As long as the media are owned by giant corporations, I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah. The only good news, I just love this story. I've been waiting all morning to get to this. See, because, you know, I also have a familial stake in this, Jim, that there be a landslide much, much worse than Goldwater Miller 64.
There has been.
Well, yes, but I'm just saying. I have a dream. I have a dream today, and that is that you know, because we were saying Sarah Palin in particular, I think she could lose every state. I do.
Okay.
The president, his ratings are much higher than hers in Alaska. They don't like quitters, I guess.
Mondale took a drubbing. That was worse than near father's.
Yes, well, thank you. We send the Mondales a Christmas card every year.
President won't tell you this, but he will raise your taxes. And I'm telling you, I will raise your taxes.
Oh, dear.
thank you.
Oh, dear. Tea Party affair could doom the GOP. This is a happy story for me. This year, however, the way to the hearts of GOP primary voters seems to be through the Koran. Already more than a half dozen GOP hopefuls have publicly warned about the imposition of Sharia law. Yes, the biggest threat to your family. They're in step with the times. Herman Cain, Pizza Guy, who we just talked about. Pizza Guy, the first Republican to formally set up an exploratory committee, is vowing not to appoint any Muslims to his cabinet or have them play in any of our reindeer games. This is...
We won't let Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
This is the increasingly radicalized GOP, the 2011 version. It's weird. I'm reading my sister's book about my dad and this whole everything that happened in 64 and how the party fractured. And yes. My dad, by the way, was chosen as the moderate to try to balance
balance the extremeness of Barry Goldwater.
Yes. Yeah. I told you every campaign stop started with my father saying what Barry meant to say.
You would have needed Hubert Humphrey to balance out.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. The GOP's most extreme wing, the Tea Party, is setting the party's political direction not just in Congress but on the presidential campaign trail. I've said from day one, I just think this is spectacular news for us. They're in their efforts to capture the hearts of Tea Party followers, Republicans may be sowing the seeds of their own 2012 demise. Indeed, as overtly conservative as the Republican Party has become in recent years, as someone said on Bill Maher, if the Republican Party moves to the right, how will we be able to tell?
Yeah.
The Tea Party is pushing the GOP farther to the right. Polenti has pledged to reinstate Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which I love.
Good luck with that.
Exactly. He's apologized for both his past support of cap-and-trade legislation, his stupid acceptance of the science of climate change. Stupid, 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 stupid.
Science. That's for dopes.
A view shared by virtually all the top Republican, all climate science deniers. Huckabee, meanwhile, has floated his long-discredited notion that health care reform will lead to death panels. He has, of course, had a dalliance with birthers now. Has said Obama's worldview shaped by his childhood in Kenya. Yeah. Donald Trump, of course, has begun openly speculating Obama is not a U.S.
Where's the birth certificate? I must see it. I bet it's huge. Huge.
It seems there is virtually no conservative hot-button issue on which Republican presidential wannabes refuse to stake out an extreme position. It's like extreme sports, extreme political sports. This is what's happening. Now every Republican presidential hopeful seems focused less on offering policy solutions and more on pandering to the Tea Party's frothy brew of resentments and fears.
Yeah.
Racism. For a candidate who might be well-positioned to pivot toward a general election campaign, the pressure to out conservative opponents could prove most damaging because it increases demands for him to mimic competitors' extreme rhetoric. It is. It's like bungee jumping without it. He's a birther. He's not just a birther. He's a... And we should attack Iraq again.
That was my bungee cord sound effect. It wasn't very good.
Here it is. Here it
comes the magical full circle. Republicans with longer memories can reflect on the disastrous impact of nominating the ultra-conservative Barry Goldwater in 1964. Regardless of whether today's Republican hopefuls believe their increasingly extreme rhetoric, their continued courting of the most radical, increasingly unpopular wing of their party increases the likelihood that Republicans will be viewed as too extreme for the presidency. But with Tea Party activists dictating the Republican agenda, there's little room for flexibility. Indeed, if the GOP continues on its current course, a Goldwater-style defeat could be in its future. Even the prospect of such a debacle is unlikely to force inter-party reflection. They're not for reflecting, as it's French and gay. If anything, the hyper-conservatism of the Republicans look like the new normal in U.S. politics. Good piece. I don't know where I read this, but we won six states.
Six? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Arizona and five in the deep south.
Yeah. Bully.
Okay. Just saying.
Mondale only won Minnesota.
All right. Just a little historical perspective of him. All right. 48 minutes after the hour, back with Bob King, president of the UAW. We've got Reverend Jim Wallace and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, funny. 6 minutes after the hour, Tommy has helpfully sent a map from the 1964 election squeaker.
Oh!
That's a big blue map.
Yeah, it is.
Etu, Utah and Idaho? Yes.
Computer says, yeah.
They went Democratic in 1964.
Did they really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Utah?
Only Arizona and five deep south states.
Utah?
Went for Goldwater.
Oh.
Oh, dear. Thank you, Tommy. That's very helpful.
Barry Goldwater couldn't pull in Utah?
Or Idaho. All right.
Oh, dear. Bless his heart.
Six minutes after the hour. All right. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. By the way, you can see us on the Ustream.
Ustream.tv/StephanieMiller. And the chat room seems to think that Jim looks really good today.
Oh, thank you.
He always does.
Unlike the
He's
other
a
days.
He's devil. Like that's what their point was, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, Bob King, the president of UAW, coming up in a moment, and I just loved this labor story. So, you know, who's the mural majority guy? Republican Governor LePage of Maine.
In Maine, yeah.
He had to take down that pesky labor mural because he felt it was too, you know.
Too labor-y
for
the Department of Labor.
Yes. If the governor of Maine won't display a mural depicting the state's labor history, the U.S. Department of Labor wants a refund on any federal money that paid for it. A senior Labor Department official says his decision to remove the artwork from state offices does not comply with the terms of the federal grant that paid for most of the mural's $60,000 cost. The demand for reimbursement was made Monday. So he's already costing Maine money because of his crappy taste in art. Did he replace it with like a Velvet Elvis or dogs playing poker or something? All right. Look, Julie in Seattle has sent us a look at this, Jim. This may be the origin of the Mitch McConnell species. The experts in Hawaii captured a legendary giant turtle for medical treatment on Sunday. He's a rare beast the size of a car door with a head as big as a human's.
Well, that's my Uncle Herman. I haven't seen him in hundreds of years.
That's funny. Is Mitch McConnell at the meeting with the president? Has he poked his head out of the...
Out of the shell? I don't know.
The meeting yet?
I don't know.
I just love how surprised he looks to be anywhere. All right.
Well, he's been everywhere for about 100 years now.
Stacy and Madison on the Supreme Court race there today. Go Kloppenburg. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Steph. Go Kloppenburg.
Woohoo!
I'm just calling to let you know that I am voting at a little Lutheran church at the top of the hill here, and my ballot count is 454 this morning, and I just wanted to let you know that there are also two very important referendums going on to limit corporations funneling money into politics in Wisconsin.
Okay. All right, good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're hearing getting reports all over the place, like a huge turnout for a Supreme Court election today, so get out and vote if you have
get her done if you're listening in Wisconsin this morning. Margaret in Washington State, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Margaret.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's no accident that the local media is not showing up. I was at the Vets for Peace March in D.C. A week ago Saturday. 130 vets were arrested. The event lasted 3 hours. If the local media, radio, TV was showing up, the people would stop shopping and walk down to Lafayette Park, and they'd have a Wisconsin at the White House.
Yep. All right. By the way, damn. Somebody couldn't hold on before. We had a right-wing caller, that we, you know, the crazy Koran-burning pastor.
Yes.
He was saying, yeah, well, what about the president makes us burn Bibles? Please call back. Why won't that guy call back?
When has the president forced us to...
You remember. Don't pretend like you don't. I think he said it yesterday in his campaign video. He said, I hope you'll help me in my
As part of
Bible.
The new energy initiative. I
urge you all to burn the Bible.
Burn Bibles instead of fossil fuels.
Okay.
All right. Joe Biden yesterday on the president's
This really is about you. We're focused on re-election. But we're first and foremost focused on dealing with the problems, opportunities, and crises that are in our path. And that's going to take a lot of, particularly the president's time, and a fair amount of my time.
Yeah, and it's a big deal.
I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he'll have to do a new You Bitches Get It Together ad for this campaign? Because indeed, this time we for sure need to.
Come on, bitches, get it together. I don't think he ever said that.
I think he did. Well, in Stephanie Miller Show lore, he did. He said something like that. All right. You know, so much going on, obviously, around the country in the labor fight. I read a great piece in the L.A. Times. Actually, a couple of great pieces yesterday. L.A. labor getting the job done. What's going on here in the labor movement is very encouraging. There was another story about the UAW, mm-hmm. and our good friend Bob King, who is the president of the UAW, joins us now. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I'm so thrilled you could take time for us this morning because, boy, we are in the fight of our lives around the country for labor, aren't we?
Yeah, we sure are. But it's exciting because I see more energy and more mobilization of our membership and people who care about a middle class, whether they're union members or not. So it's a great opportunity, I think, for as big a crisis as it is, it's that much of an opportunity, too.
Well, Bob, you've got to be encouraged. There's a story in the LA Times yesterday about the fact that, you know, Americans support collective bargaining rights for public employees by a 2-to-1 margin. And I think that they really may have awoken a sleeping giant here, do you think?
I think so. And what I hope America's waking up to, the only way we ever had a middle class was because of collective bargaining. You know, corporations never, whether it was auto or steel or trucking or wherever, the employers never would have given workers middle-class wages if the workers didn't have a voice at the table.
Yep.
Didn't have pensions or health care or anything.
Yep.
So collective bargaining is extremely important to a democracy, and I think people are beginning to see that.
Yeah, well, you know, the reason I had called you is because I saw another story in the LA Times about the UAW and you trying to organize in the South where you're having a tough time. Tell us what you're trying to do.
Well, we know that when we are able to do pattern bargaining, so when we go to the table and we can say to an employer, okay, here's what you need to do to be fair to our membership, and they say, well, I would like to do it, but I can't because it'll make me uncompetitive. If we're able to say, well, no, we're going to go to all your competition because they're all organized, and we're going to have them do the same, that's how we built the middle class in the UAW and the steel workers and others, because we had whole industries organized, and when a company would give more in wages or pensions or health care, would not make them uncompetitive. Because they would do the same. So.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a labor expert quoted in this piece saying, you know, since the 50s, UAW has played a central role in producing a growing and vibrant American middle class. The wages and benefits that you obviously got originally from the automakers set a pattern for manufacturing wages nationwide, right?
That's right. And then because of the kind of brilliance and vision of Walter Reuther, he helped, gave organizers, gave money to the building of AFSCME, to the building of American Federation of Teachers, support when SEIU in the early days.
So he understood that you couldn't just take care of your own membership. You had to look at all of society, and the more workers that you could get up to middle-class wages, the better the whole, you know, country was, and the more secure our members were if there wasn't a larger middle class.
Well, I mean, look at the story, Bob, in Detroit. I mean, you know, the unions gave unprecedented concessions. I mean, the auto rescue, I would have to say, has been one of the biggest successes we've had. You know, look at, you know, GM is back. They're poised to be number one again.
Right.
I mean, it just goes to show you if you believe in the American worker, what happens, right?
That's exactly right. And what's really great, too, is that our membership takes a lot of personal responsibility in making sure the consumer's getting the highest quality. We really work collaboratively with the companies, but also sometimes have to take the companies on when they're beginning to sway away from getting the best quality product out. In Chicago, with the launch of the Taurus and the Ford plant there, it was our members who really pushed hard to make sure the processes and the training was sufficient, so we got the best quality, and both those vehicles launched with,
right,
you know, just outstanding quality.
Well, Bob, talk about that. You know, you have yourself a battle in the South. There's this, it's called Auto Alley. A lot of these foreign automakers, Honda, Kia, Mercedes-Benz, are you know, putting their plants down there. You know, so you're saying this is a key battleground now in the labor movement. But I mean, obviously, it's tough because, you know, the companies are trying to go, oh, we don't need unions here.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The other thing that we have to wake the American public awake to is that workers do want a union when they're given a free choice, when they're not threatened to close the facility or retaliate against with discipline or discharges. And so we've proposed these principles for a fair election that would say these elections in the plant should be run just like an election for mayor or governor or president. Both sides should be able to give the electorate their viewpoint. Let the electorate decide on the base of facts, not on the base of fear.
Right. Right, and you've said that you just want a fair process, and if they decide they don't want to be in the union, you accept that and move on. But, you know,
right,
you just want a fair shot at making your case.
Right, and what the American public doesn't understand is how unfair and undemocratic the election process is under the NLRB. And that's why we're really pushing for a new way and a new approach. And we're also saying to employers, if we're successful, we're committing to you that we're going to work in partnership with you to have the best company possible. Because in a global economy, we understand that you have to do that for the job security and the income security of your membership. You know, there was a time, like in the auto industry, when the big three controlled the market, that really our job was to get our membership their fair share of the success of the company.
Right.
In today's world, you have to be concerned about quality. You have to be concerned about productivity and competitiveness if you're going to really protect your membership long term. So it's really exciting, the big three, that we make the best quality vehicles, the highest productivity plants, the best attendance in the industry.
Bob, that was
membership.
Right, and that was a great point. I'm reading in the LA Times, you said, you know, we need to make sure that companies compete on the basis of engineering, design, quality, and innovation, not on who can pay their workers the least.
Right, right.
I mean, so,
and,
you know,
and we're willing to partner with them and all the other things, and the creativity and the innovation. And our members, you know, are brilliant. They know how to build the best vehicles, and they come up with ideas all the time on how to improve them.
Yep. Well, Bob, we wish you luck in the South. We've got some affiliates down there, a bunch of listeners, so we appreciate your time and keep fighting the good fight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Stephanie.
All right. There he goes. Okay. Bob King, head of UAW.
Yeah.
The president. All right. The budget battle heating up, of course, in Washington. 18 minutes after the hour, Jim Wallace, the Reverend Jim Wallace, joins us next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 22 minutes after the hour. Oh, they've got the first anti-Obama ad all ready to go at the RNC.
We hope. And you hope. My hope is, but hope isn't hiring.
That's clever.
Where do they find that music?
Hope isn't hiring.
Okay. However, we just had the best jobs report in a couple of years, and if you look at the graphs, why, it's going straight up since, what's his name?
Oh,
George Bush left office.
So hope is hiring. Huh.
Yes,
turns out.
Apparently it is.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of graphs, looky here. Tommy in Columbus took a break from sending me Goldwater Miller maps. Yes, he did lose Wyoming, too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Alaska.
Alaska. Uh-huh. Thank you, Tommy. Thanks. Thanks very much.
How's he doing?
He says, I saw Paul Ryan earlier this morning talking about Medicare being the biggest driving force behind the federal deficit, which is a bald-faced lie. The Bush tax cuts are the biggest driving force behind the deficit. It's right there. It's a helpful graph. Look at that. By the by, somebody had called in earlier about this. Critics of Governor Scott Walker saying the hiring of a 27-year-old son of an influential lobbyist to an $81,500 a year job. Hope's not hiring, but I guess if you if you're a rich friend of Scott Walker's,
The sky's the limit.
Yeah. Is evidence the administration using state jobs for political payback. Reporting that Brian DeShane has no college degree, little management experience, and two drunk driving convictions, yet he was hired to a job overseeing environmental and regulatory matters and dozens of employees for nearly $82,000 a year. Of your money.
That doesn't seem very deficit neutral.
No, it does not. By the by, bat crazy Sharon Engel, she's running again for something, you know.
Yeah.
She's using that same charm and appeal that served her so well in the Senate race.
She's running for the state legislature in Nevada, right? Something like that?
No, she's running for the House of Representatives.
Okay.
She was last seen, as you know, losing, to Harry Reid. An election in which her extreme positions and statements damaged her standing with even some Republicans. She says she opposed abortion even in cases of rape and incest because that would interfere with God's plan.
Right.
And as you know, the famous Second Amendment remedies to electoral losses.
Mm-hmm. Now she don't win this time. You know what to do. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Now she's back on the campaign trail running for the House of Representatives. She does not appear to have toned down her extreme rhetoric. She sent an email saying, don't allow veterans to be betrayed any longer. She compared Democrats to members of Al-Qaeda, Democrats in Congress. And in an interview this weekend, she not only stood firm in that assertion, but specifically singled out President Obama as a domestic enemy.
Bush didn't do a whole lot for veterans.
Yeah, I don't.
He created a lot more of them.
Well, there you go.
Let's go to Lorraine in Boston. You're on the Stephanie.
You got me there.
Hey, Lorraine.
Hi, Mama. How you doing?
Good.
Beautiful. Listen, we can make so much money. All we have to do is, one, take all the pork out of the budget. Two, take all the benefits away from the Congress and the Senate. You know, let them pay to go to work, not have drivers. I have to pay to go to work. You have to pay to go to work. They can do it. They can drive themselves to work. And then what we can do is we can take corporations and tax them. Because remember, they make that law.
Tax them?
That's on America.
ExxonMobil has to pay more than a dollar. Something's wrong. All right. Catherine in Tucson. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, the official yellow cab driver of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hooray!
Boy, howdy.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know that the linchpin of Sharia law is the Ten Commandments.
Yep.
That
really?
Is true. Yeah.
Really now?
Mm-hmm.
Really, really.
So if you outlaw Sharia law, you're getting rid of the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the Old Testament.
Oh, goodness. Inadvertent consequences sometimes happen.
I think the state of Oklahoma discovered that, actually, when they outlawed Sharia law.
Wow.
What? We mean murder's legal now? What?
Uh-oh.
Cheese and crackers. I just want to hear some more Donald Rumsfeld. That's all.
It's been an unfortunate waste of time. It's the right decision, and I'm pleased they're doing it, and I think the country will be best served by following through in that direction.
I think the country would be best served by you being tried at The Hague, but that's just me.
Yeah, he was talking about military tribunals.
Yeah, the military tribunals.
Instead of trying terrorists on our soil. Mm. Apparently our justice system can't handle that.
No, it's flimsy.
Set up for that.
All right. We will be speaking to the Reverend Jim Wallace coming up, the big budget battle, of course, in Washington. The president's carny.
You don't know how this will play out. You can't game it day by day or hour by hour, but he looks forward to having this meeting. He thinks it's important, and he thinks we need to reach an agreement because an agreement is within reach.
I don't even know what time it is, but
I think they late morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Will the boner be drinking yet is what I want to know. Is
probably.
It? Yes.
I have a lunchtime cocktail.
I get an eyeball. Senator Harry Reid.
The only way we can avoid the terrible consequence of a shutdown is closing quickly. It's no longer measured in months or weeks. We're now just down to a few days.
Wow, he really needs to tone it down.
Yeah, he's out of control again.
Yeah
well, they're saying we don't actually technically have till Friday. You know, you don't have till Friday at midnight. They have to, you know, an actual agreement has to be made before that. Yeah. Senator, the elfin, Senator Jeff Sessions.
That could be a solution, though, where we're heading. But I just don't know. I don't think the government will be shut down. I think somehow that will be avoided.
Yeah.
But if it does, I'll just go back to my tree and continue making cookies.
Fudge Stripe. Make more Fudge Stripe cookies.
Yeah, you can't shut that down.
No, God, no.
Representative Tim Griffin, Republican of Arkansas.
You see a bill that came out of the House? You've seen nothing from these guys. It's a charade. They're acting like they're in good faith. They're throwing numbers out.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, where's the bill?
Mm-hmm. Because Eric Cantor told him if you don't pass one, then the other one just becomes, automatic.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, Reverend Jim Wallace next on the Stephanie Miller Show. God, I was so into you.
Stephanie Miller.
I never missed a broadcast of that controversial pirate radio station you ran out of your basement.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
30, I miss
Taylor
the basement.
Dane all the time.
34 minutes after the hour. Don't forget the Hump Days with Hal Sparks tomorrow. Yay! Happy clappy time. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. The Reverend Jim Wallace, the official preacher of the Stephanie Miller Show for the opening benediction. Good morning, Reverend.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm concerned about you. You're in day 10 of fasting?
Well, I think it's actually day. It's just day 9. So,
oh, okay. Is it? Oh, boy. Not that anybody's counting. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you're taking good care of yourself.
I am. The first week, we just did water for 7 days, and now yesterday I took some orange juice, and it really tasted good.
Yeah, I bet. So talk about what you're doing. Obviously, you know, as usual, you are really taking it to people on the moral case for the budget. You and over 24 Christian leaders send a budget message to Congress. What would Jesus cut? Tell us about what you're doing.
Well, first of all, the good news is 30,000 people in the first week joined this fast. All
wow.
The country. And we have said for a long time to our lawmakers a budget is a moral document. We've been asking. Now we're pleading. Fasting is pleading. Fasting is often a personal thing that you do for spiritual cleansing and devotion, and that's good. But there's public fasts in the Bible. Esther, the Jewish heroine, she fasted, called the people to fast to get the king to change his mind. And we're fasting to change the framework. The framework, Stephanie, of this budget debate is all wrong. The Republicans say we're broke, we have to cut everything. The Democrats say, wait, not so much. And the attacks go back and forth, and they threaten shutdowns and all the rest. But a budget is about the values we express in our choices. And we're simply not seeing yet that it's all a matter of choices.
Well, Reverend, I mean, again, it seems like sometimes, you know, we keep saying the same thing. But, again, how can you not say it until somebody hears you, I guess, that I was just looking at this graph. And, I mean, again, as many people have pointed out, we're not broke. The money is going to the top 1%. It's the fact that that's the holy grail to them is they will not touch tax cuts for the rich. And go ahead.
Let's have a referendum on whether the American people would choose cutting $8.5 billion for low-income housing or cutting $8.5 billion for mortgage tax deductions for second vacation homes.
Yeah.
Or $11.2 billion in early childhood programs for poor kids or $11.5 billion of tax cuts for millionaires' estates.
Yeah, I mean, what they're cutting is really support for education, especially in low-income communities. Proven work and income supports that lift families out of poverty. Critical child health and family nutrition programs at home and abroad. International aid that directly and literally saves lives from pandemic disease.
Well, some of these cuts will kill you. Rod Shaw, head of USAID, said 70,000 people will die quickly here. And so, I wanted someone to stand up and say that every line item of military spending is worth cutting 10.4 million bed nets to keep kids from getting malaria, millions of vaccinations, hundreds of thousands not getting their HIV medications. This is it's bad even for national security. And so the faith community is forming a circle of protection, that's what we're calling it, around the programs that are working, that are proven, that don't even cost very much, but protect the lives and the futures of America's poorest and the world's poorest and most vulnerable. And the good news is this is now beyond the faith community. MoveOn is joining the fast, and SEIU is joining the fast, and lawmakers are not calling us up on the Hill to talk about the fast. And we're saying, fasting tends to focus you.
Yeah, I'll say.
Focus you. And so we're focused on, I want to say real clearly that we're not fasting against fiscal health and responsibility. I'm for that. I got two kids. I don't want them crushing debt either. But budget hawks don't bother me as much as budget hypocrites. When you don't go after where the real money is, instead you pick on the poor. And that's not right. That's wrong. And so we're saying, really, in effect, we're forming a circle around the poorest and most vulnerable. And if you come after them, you're going to have to come after us first.
Well, I think one of your colleagues, I forget who, had made the point that, as we always say many times, this is the party that claims to be the party of moral values and family values and religious values. And, here they are doing something that, I think it was, he was saying Jesus said that you will be judged on how you treat the least among you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew 25, that's the chapter that's from, got quoted yesterday in the on the Hill, Nancy Pelosi has to come to talk to her, and all the networks were there, and all they want to talk about the press is politics. And I said, no, wait a minute, this is not about just politics now. We're talking about moral choices we're making. And so that's what we're saying here. And 30,000 people is a lot of people. And when you fast, you tend to get clearer about, and you pray more, or you think more, or you reflect more.
About the fact that you'd probably really like a sandwich, but what you're doing is important.
The toughest part was coaching my son's Little League baseball team on the sixth day of the fast, water fast, and having to make lunch for my boys between baseball and soccer. Those cheese quesadillas smelled so.
Oh, no.
As a man of God, you probably had a little less patience for unforced errors.
But here's the thing. Even fasting here, what you do is you walk by food all the time. You get your bottle of water out of the refrigerator, and there's all this food. You pass apples and bananas and snacks. But the same hunger pangs I'm now feeling are felt by people all over the world, about half of them all over the world. And there's no food in sight. There's no food in sight for them. They don't sort of see the food they're going to be able to eat. I'm going to Easter with this 3 more weeks. And people are doing relay fasts. In fact, it's becoming spiritually viral. All this thing's growing. And so people who want to join the fast for a day or two or skip a meal, it's called fast, pray, and advocate. Act. So we're talking to members of Congress. We're wanting to wake them up to what our values are and to have them ask what their values are. And so our website's a place to come. It's sojo.net, S-O-J-O.net. You can how to get involved. You see great stories of people. It makes people who are feeling powerless feel like there's something that they can do.
Well, yeah, just to take a stand.
Yeah.
Reverend, I've got to ask you before you go, because, obviously I love what you're doing, and this is such an important week in Washington, but I have to ask you your reaction to this Pastor Terry Jones who burned the Koran and what's obviously happening now in Afghanistan because of it.
Well, I was part of the effort in New York to dissuade him from doing it last time. We put together a team, and we got him to stand down. And he's really beyond the pale of the Christian community now. None of us even know him. He's acting really on his own, and I'm afraid this man cares more about his publicity than lives.
Yeah.
The theological term for Terry Jones is a wing nut. But it's more serious than that now because people have died.
Well, and not just that, Reverend. We were talking this morning. It really is stunning when you think of us. Not just that the body count is up to 22 people, but that this has reinvigorated the Taliban, who's, in Afghanistan. One man who claims to be a man of God can do this.
But, I can also tell you stories about how Muslim men in Pakistan, in a room full of men, called another pastor friend of mine in Tennessee, who welcomed the Memphis Islamic Cultural Center to his neighborhood with a big sign, "Welcome Islamic Cultural Center," and let them have Ramadan in his church, and they have become friends. And now this group of Muslims called my pastor friend and said, "We want to call you. We just saw the segment on CNN, Pastor. We want to tell you that we were so moved and so amazed by this that we went out and we met the Christians in a little tiny church near us, and we cleaned it, and we said, we're going to take care of that church for the rest of our lives."
Yeah.
So there are many more examples of people of faith acting in collaboration, cooperation, but unfortunately, the media elevates the wing nuts.
Yeah.
There's even a network that does that.
I'm going to send an MP3 of this interview to Afghanistan and say, no, this is the kind of reverence that Americans are. We're not that kind.
Well, Stephanie, I want to invite you and your staff and your listeners to join this fast and do it for skip a meal or do a day. We'll send you information. But this has got to be, this can energize a movement to really focus moral pressure on decision making, because it won't be over, as you know, with this FY11 budget.
That's right.
Well, this is going to go on for a long time. So there's a real movement growing here, and I've been amazed at the people calling and the stories they're telling. I'll just tell you one at the end. This doctor who's a doctor, a friend of mine, worried about me, calling about my health, and he says, "Well, I have to admit, Sunday I walked in a church and the youth group in our church announced a 30-hour fast for the poor and for a better budget because of your fast. So if teenagers in Tennessee are getting the word, I'm encouraged by that."
Yeah, absolutely. Reverend Jim Wallace.
Jojo.net, SOJO.net. We'd love to have people join.
And we have a link to that up at StephanieMiller.com right now.
You're actually the only guest I should use the phrase "doing the Lord's work" about. I'm afraid I've been too liberal with that phrase. Truly doing the Lord's work. Reverend Jim Wallace, thank you
always
so much.
I'd like to talk to you.
You too, sir. There he goes. Reverend Jim Wallace.
Oh.
What was that look you gave me, Chris, when he asked if you'd like to join the fast?
Well, not for
you godless communists. You praised Jesus because you'd have to give up cheese, so you can't make that sacrifice for the poor, can you?
I can't fast for 40 days. I could do a day. I could do a day.
He did like Roger Rabbit eyes. Would you like to join the fast?
All right. I will forswear.
Well, you gave me that look right back. People on Ustream saw it.
I will forswear the last 7 glasses of wine, so that will...
I'm almost on an all liquid diet with wine, but I mean, I gotta have my cheese, Reverend, for God's sakes. How much can I sacrifice?
Okay.
He really is doing the Lord's work, though. He's doing such... Oh,
he is.
I look
that look
him.
On his face, Jim, was literally like he was looking at me like, can she make me do that? All right. 40...
I was thinking, huh? Legally, can she... I was going through the workers' laws in my mind right now. Maybe I really should unionize.
I can't curl these 10-pound dumbbells. Oh, so weak.
Oh, please. I could curl... With my tongue, I could curl 10-pound dumbbells.
Ew.
All right. Well,
what?
You probably dropped Kirsty Alley on Dancing with the Stars like her partner did last night.
Oh, that was bad.
Yes, we'll talk about that and much more in Celebrity Stack as we continue. 46 minutes after the hour.
That's what Paddy's for.
The Stephanie Miller Show.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the maybe Christy Alley and her partner should have just vogued, just stick with hands and not trying to carry her. All right, 51 minutes after the hour. Is she okay? He dropped her?
Yeah, oh, she's. I guess she's okay. I haven't heard otherwise.
Is the stage okay?
Oh, stop it,
Jim Louise Ward. We got a huffy letter from a rich person with a second home.
Oh,
tell the guest he's wrong, meaning the very Reverend Jim Wallace.
I must protest in the strongest possible terms. Mm-hmm. I have a second home because I've worked hard for it and get the write-off of the interest. I am not a millionaire, so doing away with that write-off means I cannot afford that home anymore. You need to be careful thinking that only millionaires get to write off this interest. The caller acted like this is something to eliminate to save tax revenue loss, and he's absolutely wrong in attacking this write-off. Go after the real millionaire write-offs. I'm informing all of my staff to stop listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. Harumph.
I don't think they said
love
that. No.
Thurston. Harumph. Thurston and Lovey. Harumph. The caller. Go. That Reverend Jim Wallace.
I work really hard. I would like a second
fasting
home.
Why isn't he fasting so that you can afford your second home, for God's sakes, Thurston? He's got his priorities all screwed up again.
Mm. Hell, I'd like a first home.
Are you kidding on what I pay you? If you can ever afford a home, that means I've failed. As a capitalist.
Oh, God.
Oh, my kid. Oh, I laughed a little too hard at that, didn't I?
Yeah,
did. All right. Yes. Oh, Julie sends us the preview of the awful Paul Ryan play. Oh, where's my Munsters music? That's what I need. Eddie Munster's little demonic plan. Step today, Representative Paul Ryan will unveil his plan to end future Medicare eligibility for anyone now under 55. Hey there, about to be old people. Get ready to live in those chicken coops we keep hearing about in the AARP TV ad. Which should work out well for you, as you'll be needing the chickens anyway to barter with your doctor.
Yeah.
This would allow people nearing retirement 12 years to get their together so they can get by on their multiple crash recession-riddled 401ks. Now also someone somehow still procure adequate geriatric health care insurance on crappy vouchers tied to general economy inflation rates, not the actual rise of health care costs.
No.
Clever. Ryan tosses out $15,000 annually as the maximum voucher. Depending on your income, you could get a lot less. And in truly magnificent display of Republican hypocrisy, you'll be forced to buy private insurance from a government-funded exchange, which sounds exactly like Obamacare, but this one's only for old, sick, expensive people, so there's no chance it could possibly work. Wow. I think I'll call the Republican version, put Grandma on the ice floe, and give it a shove towards the sea lane plan.
Exactly. Oh.
Two trillion from Medicare. He wants to cut $2 trillion with a T from Medicare. Good plan. Winning, duh!
There'll be mobs of old people with torches and pitchforks coming to his house.
Can I say something about the AARP ad?
What?
I really want that old lady to fall in love again. The one that's decorating the cake.
She's not that old.
She's old as Stephanie.
Exactly. I'm so
single?
Relate. I'm like, let's go, girl. Me too. I want to fall in love again, too.
She's not that old. The woman in the spot.
Okay. Charlie Sheen, no, you know what? I'm not really sure whether this was just a one-time thing just because Chicago hates Detroit or whether the show was really better. As the show began, some people began shouting, Detroit sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, Sheen urged the audience in an obscenity-laced statement not to become Detroit tonight. Let's show Detroit how it's done.
Oh.
And then when the interviewer asked Sheen when he'd started winning, the actor he responded, the winning started in Chicago. That's when the winning started again, was in Chicago. Is he going to try that in the next city, though? Like, Chicago sucks. Don't be Chicago. Like, he'll just find cities that hate each other, and that's the only way he'll get
people walked out of the show in Chicago, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. After bombing hard during his opening show in Detroit and getting booed off the stage, he changed the format in Chicago. It was a Q&A. He had some interviewer asking him questions.
That's your old trick.
Yeah.
That's what I do when I don't want to prepare any material. He regaled the crowd with tale of the first time he tried drugs. He talked about his marriages, his legal problems, and explained why he prefers to pay for sex. He said, I have millions to blow and I ran out of stuff to buy.
So Hooker's the only thing left, I guess. People are actually paying for this.
Okay. How about giving it away to charity? There are tons of things you could do with it without paying
hookers.
For blows
is that your
blowing
only...
hookers.
What a dichotomy. The Reverend Wallace is fasting for poor people, and he's like, I got some money.
I'm hookers for...
Hookers. That's what I'll do.
That's
what I'll do. Oh, guess what? Prince William is being urged to make Kate Middleton sign a prenup. Kate, an insider, a royal insider, said, Kate's joining a family known as the firm, and every other employee of the royal household has a contract of employment, which includes a fairly severe gagging clause.
Gagging?
Oh, really?
Did you make your wife sign a gagging clause?
No, I did not.
No?
I don't think that means what you think it means. I do not think it means what you think it means.
I'm just saying it's that it had Queen Skank Biscuit written all over
it.
Yes, yes. Oh, this was a cool story, but I don't know if it's true. The National Enquirer says Angelina Jolie is terrorizing Jack Black with the Angry Birds. Remember how Sparks terrorized me with Angry Birds?
Yes, he did.
Last week. They claim the cast and crew on the set of Kung Fu Panda are scared to death of Angie, who's become obsessed with flinging birds through the air using a virtual slingshot, but there is at least one man who didn't back down, Jack Black. Jack Black beat Angelina 3 out of 4 times. Angelina would get so into it, she'd scream and yell and make screechy bird sounds.
That's weird.
I
that's the way Brad likes it, I guess.
What's that?
That's the way Brad likes it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got a gig. I got to go.
You gotta, Jim Ward's got to go now.
Bye,
see
Jim.
See you, Jim.
He has another
He's
gig.
Got a thing with a guy. He's got a voiceover session, as they say in Hollywood. All right. Tomorrow, Hump Days with Hal Sparks. Yay, it's Ice Cream and Ponies Day. Love it. Join us then, won't you?
He may have turned on the president by now.
No, he has not. I'd like to thank executive producer, engineer, boy toy, Chris LeBoy, voice deity, Jim Ward, associate producer, Rebecca Taylor. We'll see you tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.